Hey, everybody. Welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchik. We're here to talk about the Packers' 27-25 loss at US Bank Stadium in Minneapolis to the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. And Eric, let's dive right in. This is something you brought up and actually wanted to write about last week, and I resisted. And so we saved it, and it was Jordan Love. Looks like he might be a year away from being a guy who's going to win you games consistently against good teams, if he's ever going to become that, that he's over-adjusted to the interceptions early in the year. Now he's playing a little too cautiously. You saw a lot of that in this game, you thought, right?
Yeah. Well, we saw it the last couple games, even against the Saints. And that's where it dawned on me. It was like, looking, when you're looking at what are the pieces of your football team that you need to really be a Super Bowl contender, you know, having an elite quarterback or a very, very good quarterback, maybe not elite, you know, because you, a lot of times the elite quarterbacks don't win the Super Bowl, but to get there, you got to have a quarterback that's going to can bail you out when nothing else is working. You got to be able to lean on this guy. And I thought in the same game, you know, that wasn't there the week before that. There seems to be too many plays left out on the field where there are opportunities to make throws that didn't happen. And there's a numerous amount of opportunities, I thought, in this football game that he left out on the field there. And sometimes early in the season, I thought he was trying to be too much. And he's not twitchy enough, I don't believe, to be able to throw at all different balances. And his arm angles are pretty good, but sometimes off balance, the really, really good quarterbacks can be off balance and have the arm strength and the twitchiness to be able to zip that ball in there. I don't think he has that. I think he has a lot of the tools that you really want for a quarterback. I mean, he just looks like a quarterback, tall, thin ankles, thin joints, big, you know, he's got a good release. He's got a little bit of a cannon, his touch could be a little better at times. But here's the thing is there's plays out there when the rush is getting there, he's got to be able to get rid of the ball. And instead of turning the ball and run with it, I think there are times, I mean, I'll go to the third quarter on the crossing route by Reed. He had a chance there. It was a twin set. They're in man coverage. And it was a perfectly designed run or a route. He cuts in. And for whatever reason, Love held onto the ball for that extra 2 seconds. Now the linebacker is breathing down his throat. He runs, ends up throwing to Reed, but it was a little off balance. It got tipped, and Reed, Reed drops it anyway. But I guess the reality is that ball should have been thrown. As soon as Reed, his shoulders turned, before his head even turned to the quarterback, the ball had to come out of his hands. Another play where there was a crossing route in the second quarter where he threw it to Dobbs and they just about got the first down. But if he had a little bit more calmness, he fires that ball down the middle to 13 who's standing there and there's nobody within 15 yards of the guy.
Yeah, you know, when we talked, you were unsure whether he scores a touchdown there, but they obviously would get the first down. I had forgotten the play, so when I rewatched it this afternoon, he scores a touchdown there. There's only one guy, and the guy's coming at him, but Wicks is strong. All he would have had to do is slip one tackle, and he's in the end zone. Yep.
He's got to steal a phrase. He's got to let it rip. In these situations against big teams, he's got to let it rip, and you're going to have an opportunity sometimes, and you just got to take it. You got to let it rip. You know, at the beginning part of the season, he was forcing balls, and he was kind of letting it rip, but just a little too wild. Now he's toned it down to the point where it's just too – it's not enough. He's got to let it rip and let it go and trust his eyes because right now it feels like to me that he's patting the ball too much and not trusting his eyes. Just let it rip. You know, there's a handful of other throws he could have made that, you know, even the best of the best quarterbacks have bad passes. Even the great Joe Burrows, Joe Montana, Favre, Rodgers, they all have bad passes on occasion. Those things happen. But the difference is they let it rip when they see it. They trust their eyes. And here's the part that you cannot be discouraged about is a second year as a starter. Second year as a starter. Name me a quarterback that's a second-year starter that took their team to the Super Bowl.
The only one.
Not Mahomes.
Although he wanted his first year as a starter.
Well, it wasn't his second year, right?
No. And it wasn't. And, you know.
But that team was a different team, though.
He's going to end up. If just my two-bit opinion, he's going to end up being better than Brady. I mean, he is just incredible. You know, the chance of finding somebody that good are, you know, infinitesimal. But, you know, you don't have to be that good to win Super Bowls and to compete for Super Bowls. And, the guy I kept thinking about this year as Love was struggling and that you brought up today when we were talking on the phone that we mentioned in the column is C.J. Stroud. He had an incredible rookie year rookie quarterbacks never play as well as he did last year. And this year he statistically and winning wise, he hasn't been any better. He's had a season much like Love's.
Last year he let it rip. And this year there's more pressure. Oh, I got to be this quarterback. I got this contract. You know, in the case of Love, I got this contract. There's more pressure. There's more expectations. You got to just let it rip. That's why
it's never linear. The growth is never linear. And defensive coordinators had all offseason to study these guys. So they probably found a couple things that, you know, bother them some and they've got to adjust to it, you know. I think of Favre, you know, how long it took him to scale back his risk taking, you know, before he became great. It wasn't until the second half of the 95 season, really.
Right. Right. There's
even then he threw a terrible interception against in the NFC Championship game against Dallas in the fourth quarter. In that game, he threw a bad interception that, it was a huge turning point.
He's got to just let it rip. And the other part, too, is the telltale sign of that is the holding on to the football. I mean, the offensive line has given them time on that particular the play I talked about with Reed, where he bails out of the pocket and still hits Reed on the by the numbers where he should have hit him on the first hash. Athletic play, no question about it. Get rid of the ball. Get it out. Quit hanging on to the football. And those are the things that are going to happen. The natural maturation point or process for him is he's processing now. If there is anything that he could do between now and it looks like Philadelphia for the playoff game, is just relax and just trust your eyes and let it rip. Let it rip.
So, and there's no answer to this question. That's because none of us knows because it's in the future. But, you know, what I wonder is, I mean, I'm skeptical that he can get there in 2 weeks, but maybe they're closer than it looked in the first half. You know, maybe it's just a couple of mistakes and maybe
a couple of drop passes, a couple of terrible drops.
Yeah. He might be close to having a great game like he did against Dallas last year. I don't know. I just don't know if he can do it in the next 2 weeks or if it's something that doesn't happen till next year or till late next year.
Look at how the first quarter started. They get the ball and they get down there and son of a gun, you get a drop or you get a fumble. You know what? A hard runner like that, he's going to put the ball on the ground. It's going to happen
every once in a while.
Yep. And it hasn't been a problem, and it happened. Okay, that you overcome it. They come out. The defense does a marvelous job and forces the Vikings to punt. Now they get the ball. First pass is a little bit probably not the right throw. 85 or you got Tucker Kraft open. He missed that one. Then the big one.
He threw to Dobbs on a deep out, and he had Kraft for a short check down over the middle.
And then there's the Edward Paddlehands. Actually, the guy who won the Edward Paddlehands award this weekend was our friend Jaden Reed. And I've been screaming to get him the ball. I guess now we know why he don't throw him the ball much. He can't catch. Wicks drops it, and then you have a bad pass on third down there. That was a bad miss. But you know, Wicks doesn't drop that ball. That drive is still going. You know, and it just, and then you get, you got to keep, you know, you just got to keep your head up and keep rolling and keep rolling. And I guess the point that, you know, you really, it got out of control, but it wasn't like they were getting their tails handed to them. It was, you know, just bad circumstances. You know, a drop here, drop there, we miss a guy here, miss a guy there, and, you know, here we go.
So that leads to the next question. Playoff start, they're in. Playoff start in 2 weeks. If Washington wins next weekend, it doesn't matter what the Packers do. Packers will be going to Philadelphia for the wild card round of the playoffs. If not, that it's probably to LA, maybe to Tampa if the Packers end up the sixth seed. But are they? How dangerous are they? I read some interesting comments today, but what's your kind of?
I still think they're dangerous. I'm sorry, but the five games they lost, they didn't have any bad losses, right? I mean, the one Detroit game was an uglier score than what it should have been because of some miscues there. But they're still a young team. They're still going to make stupid mistakes. There's things that are going to happen. But I really feel like they're a pretty dangerous ball club. If they can get a couple things to happen, they'll be in good shape. You know, you go to Philly, and if they can play the run the way they played the run against the Vikings and against the Saints, and, you know, put it in Jalen Hurts' hands. And I think the way Jalen Hurts is playing and the way he's played all year, especially you look back at the first game, he had two picks that should have been that got dropped. The Packers still had two interceptions in that game. There's going to be opportunities for them if they can pick off the passes, and there's going to be opportunities for turnovers. Heck, if they can convert on a couple of those, you know, it's hard to say that these guys are going to go to Philly and get worked. I think anybody that they play is they're going to have their hands full, and I believe that if Jordan Love for some reason, if Matt LaFleur gets in his head, says, dude, just let it rip, that it goes. You know, anything can happen. You can get hot again. It could be like that Dallas game, and just let it rip.
Really curious to see. You know, it's funny. So I was reading. So Mike Sando is a national writer for The Athletic, and every week he does kind of a wrap up of. He basically hits like six bullet points of things happening around the league, questions that he has, and he talks to a few front office personnel. And the Vikings was a team he talked about, but in that discussion, he got into the division and the playoffs, and he talked to it was just a couple of GMs, but one of them said. He thinks the Packers are really dangerous, and that if he were working for, you know, if it was his team, he'd be a little worried about the Packers coming in to Minnesota. If he ran Minnesota, he'd be worried about the Packers coming in for a playoff game because all the pressure would be on the Vikings after this great season they've had, and that facing LaFleur and Love with nothing to lose like they were last year in the playoffs. He said he thinks the Packers are pretty dangerous and he might even pick them to win that game. I don't know if I agree, but pretty interesting.
There's enough on that. If you watch that game close enough, there's enough adjustments that you can make on offense with the passing game, with throwing the ball in the middle part of the field, deep ends, being able to get the ball out quicker. I think there's going to be some opportunities because you got to withstand that pass rush, and it's coming. There's no way about it. I mean, heck, sometimes they were sending five, six guys on second down. You know, I like it. I think there's opportunities there. If you watch the film close enough where you can say, all right, this is what we're going to do different. We're going to break off routes quicker. We're going to be making sure that we are running more stuff across the middle. And if they want to blitz, have at it, because we're going to throw short passes in the middle part of the field, whether you're going to have any defenders, and we're going to run a long ways. So it's going to be, you know, let's hit the tight ends. Let's get our fast guys running and do some dig routes, do some dagger routes where they're going to allow the outside receiver to come screaming down underneath the zone. I mean, there's opportunities there, you know. Shoot the game. I would have ran two twins all night long and had my outside guy just dagger down in between underneath the guy who's running a deep nine all night long. That play was there just for whatever reason. They held onto the ball or they weren't running a lot of those routes. So I think some of the routes are going to be a little bit different in the middle part of the field if they played again. And I think that's probably the weakness right now of that football team is they got to be able to execute in the middle part of the field because there's opportunities there for them. If they're going to send guys through the A-gaps at Love to get in his mug, do it. I would, if I'm the old corner, I'd say do it. Do it every play. You can run guys at me because I'm going to have him coached up. So I'm going to take the tallest guy on our team and have him stand up and start running A-gaps and make Love throw that ball in between the hashes because the ball, they were there. It was there. They just didn't have the routes to do it, and they didn't execute it, and the quarterback hung onto the ball too much. I really like it. And in the ground game was working. They just had to – they got run out of the running game because they had to throw the football to catch up. Had a couple of those drives. You know, it doesn't fumble that. I mean, they were really moving the ball on that first drive. If that ball doesn't hit the turf, you know, the game is, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, if it's in butts or candy and nuts. But the reality is the quarterback play was not good enough to take them to the next level or take them into that elite category.
Yeah, that's when you just need, you know, when things are going badly, you just need the quarterback to be the – you know, the guy who makes the difference, the great equalizer. Yep. That's just the way the NFL is. You know, it'll really be the three-dimensional chess game starts really picking up, you know, if they play Detroit or Minnesota again, you know, because they did this the first game, this the second game. So what are they going to do the third game?
Run the ball. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, because Flores
throw it to the tight end.
Flores really played, you know, there wasn't as much lining 7 and 8 up and then bailing out. He just kept those safeties back quite a bit this game, as opposed to most of the games in the first time they played.
Yeah, they weren't going to allow any big plays. That's for sure. They were going to keep everything 20 and under.
So will he do that again if they play again, or will he change that up?
I don't know. I think, you know, you kind of go with what got you there, right? And you start off playing kind of the same way maybe and then throw some wrinkles in. My guess is they would probably, depending on who's on the field, you know, if Watson is going to be on the field, they'll probably play kind of the similar style. If he's not on the field, then I think they're going to attack even more than what we saw.
They sure did not give off the sense. I mean, Watson was, you know, either a Saturday or Sunday decision to play. I just can't imagine him not being back for the playoffs. And my guess is he'll play this week. Bruised knee. It's not a soft tissue. It's not a ligament or anything like that. So I'm guessing he'll be good to go probably this week, I would guess even. You know, it's funny, you know, in looking at it from the other side of the ball, I walked away from this game. They gave up 27 points and 400 and some yards. And I walked away from this game thinking the defense played fine. You know, they held Aaron Jones down. Justin Jefferson didn't kill him. I know after we talked, you basically agreed. What'd you see there?
I really, coming into the ball game, the one thing that could have kept me, I think could have got blown open if they did not stop the run off the bat. And I thought they did a really nice job. He squirted through a couple times, but a good back, he's going to do that. Good back is going to squirt through, and that's, you're going to get those ones. But what we didn't see was a lot of the big cutback plays that happened where he makes big plays happen because they stayed home and they were really good at the point of attack. And that is the key thing. And they had good penetration from their tackles and their ends didn't go crashing down. So all the cutback lanes were really kind of tied up. It was just, you know what? He squirt through on a couple, and that I thought it wasn't too bad. You know, there could have been a heck of a lot more rushing yards out there that would have totally changed the way the game looked. But I like the way they played. And in the passing game, it was tough. You know, there's no question about it. It was definitely tough. But I think the reality is it could have been a lot worse. You know, Jefferson, they held him under 100 yards, which, you know, you got to circle that one. And you got to feel pretty good about how that went. And the guy that kind of beat him up a little bit was Naylor. And you know what? That's what you want to do. You want to make him play left-handed. And they got him this time a little bit. But I think, you know, when you rush that, throw that team out there, that, you know, the disparity in the number of plays between 70 offensive or defensive snaps versus 57 defensive snaps that the Vikings had, that's a big number. And those things are, you know, when you give them that many opportunities, things are gonna go south. And you could have taken away if the offense would have been able to be more effective and run more plays.
You know, I know when you're watching TV copy, you know, people at home just they can't see it. You got to be at the game to see it. But the Justin Jefferson effect on a defense is really something to behold. You know, I tried to keep an eye, and I didn't watch it every play, but I tried to keep an eye on it. Man, watching the Packers safeties, they always helped to his side. McKinney was always, you know, pre-snap, you couldn't tell him then, but boy, the ball gets snapped and he'd start drifting over to cover Jefferson. And it was so obvious. It jumped out on the first touchdown. It was a 30-some yard one to Naylor. And McKinney was in the middle of the field and he had Jefferson running a crossing route in front of him. And so he either could drop back and, you know, not let the ball go over the top if anybody was behind him, or he could go to Jefferson. And he went to Jefferson. The ball went over the top, easy touchdown. But, you know, as he said after the game, you got to make other guys beat you. You can't let Jefferson beat you. And, you know, I'm sure they talked about that all week.
Of course. You know, you circle the guys that you're going to take away and make them beat you with, you know, like I said, left-handed. And, you know, unfortunately, it happened a little more than they wanted it to happen. But I think it coming, you know, the other thing, too, is you had Bullard that was, you know, he was a step slow. So, you know, hopefully, you know, if they have to play them again in a couple weeks or, you know, looking at Philadelphia, I mean, that's worth who they're probably going to play if, you know, if we're to end today. You know, now they got to you're going to have Williams back and Bullard back. They're going to be a little tougher down there in the middle part of the field, and that'll definitely hurt or help.
Yeah, Bullard's coming off that ankle injury. He missed.
He looked slow.
Yeah, he missed at least two games. I can't remember if it was three. I think it was just two, but he did. He looked a half step slow to me.
I would agree.
Just watching it live. So interesting little thing with Jair Alexander today. You know, today's Monday. We're recording this Monday evening. And Matt LaFleur was asked whether there was a discrepancy. First, he was asked if he thinks is Alexander going to be back, you know, sometime this season. And he said he didn't know. And then he was asked if there's a discrepancy between the way the team sees the injury and the way Alexander sees it. And he said, he said, I'm not going to get into that. But he does have some swelling in his knee and it's, you know, preventing him. He just doesn't think he can play with it. I interpret that as that there's probably, they probably do see it a little differently, that, you know, there's something legitimate there, but you got the sense they think it's something that he probably or possibly could play through. And he's not, that's kind of the vibe they gave off. You know, it's so hard to comment on whether a guy's injury, how bad it is, you know, there's no way to know.
So right there on, you know, whether you got it in the chest or not. And if he feels, you know, like he's not 100%, he's not going to play 100%. And that's just the way it is. And some guys got more heart than others, but yeah. I'm not saying maybe he is. I mean, I'm not in the field, certainly not in the tub there with him to look at it and talk to him about it. But I mean, it comes down to a couple of things and you got to be able to stand up and go through it. And if you're not, you don't have the in your heart to do it, you can't do it. You can't put a guy out there. It's going to hurt you more than it's going to help you.
And, you know, some guys are, you know, some players are, they got a little thoroughbred in them. You know, how a thoroughbred, if, you know, one hair's out of place, they can't run. And that's, I'm exaggerating here, but you know, some guys can just function better when, you know, better than others when they're not feeling right, you know, when they're hurt, when something's off, they just find a way to labor through it. And it's, you know, corner is a really tough position to play. The guys you got to cover are so big and fast. And so I get that it's not easy. And, you know, and the thing is, Alexander always was a willing tackler, which, you know, that takes some toughness, right? So I don't know what to think there. It just makes you wonder what's going on there. You know, with a guy who, and it just affects the way their defense plays, you know, cause he's by far their best cover guy. And it kind of ties their hands on what they can do.
Yeah, and especially one thing I did notice in the game is they played a little tougher up on the line of scrimmage on occasion. It wasn't very often. So, you know, if your knee is a little bit creaky, that may not be the best, the best medicine for you. So another week, get them fixed up, tape them up, do what you got to do, and get them out there.
Yeah, I don't if I'm the Packers, I wouldn't be real – I don't know how I'd feel about bringing him back, just for the playoffs after missing, two plus months. I just wonder how sharp he'd be. They did that for that San Francisco game, and he ended up not being able to play. He had that shoulder injury and ended up not playing very well in that game. So I don't know. If I were the Packers, I would very much want him back this week. And if he can't come back to the playoffs, then in the playoffs, I'd only play him part-time, just rotate him in. And I wouldn't build any kind of game planning around him at all.
No, you're probably right.
Real quick, I didn't want to get out of this without talking about 56, Adrian Cooper.
He's turning into a fine young player, isn't he?
He has the potential to be just a stud, I think, like a real difference maker, like, one of the top handful of linebackers in the league. And you got to find guys like this if you're going to have good defense. Now they just need to somehow find a pass rusher who's of this quality. And it ain't easy, So what do you see there with this guy? I mean, he had four tackles for loss. At least two and maybe three of them were on, at least two were on Jones. Tough guy to tackle.
Yeah, what was on him? He's very twitchy, and he's very explosive, and he learned a lesson when you're going to come running up against a veteran running back that you can't just run him through, So the next time that happens, I would expect him to win that battle and come barreling at Jones and then give him an arm over or give him a forearm to the face mask, one of those kind of things. Because, boy, that was the one play I was like, ooh, there's a rookie move where he just got stonewalled by a guy that weighs 180 pounds soaking wet.
Oh, was that on a blitz?
That was early on. I was like, ooh, he learned that one. Good play for Jones. That's a good veteran play to stay low and hunker down and get ready and deliver a blow there. But I really feel like what you like about him is just in the run game, what I like is he just presses the line hard. And when he's going, he's going. And there's no fooling around. It's I'm going to go make that tackle. And you like that. You like the way he attacks lead blockers and just keeps fighting. He doesn't allow himself to get blocked. Sometimes you come barreling in there and you make a collision and you stop, but he keeps his feet moving and is able to redirect after the initial blow. And those are things that you don't teach. Those are things you either got in your chest or you don't. And that's what you got to find. That's the one difference between him and Quay Walker. Where Quay Walker comes in and makes a collision, you not as good because it's usually 2 or 3 yards downfield, but his feet stop. And that's one of the big problems that he's got to be able to overcome is keep those feet moving so that he can get through the block and make a play.
I think Cooper's I'm thinking back. So I started covering the team in 93. He's showing more ability than any linebacker I've seen in that time.
I tell you one thing about it that is strange is I know they got him listed at 230, but it's hard to believe that that's a 230-pound man.
I know.
He's a big individual.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of
– he plays bigger.
Walker's 242, and Cooper plays much bigger than Walker does as far as a hitter and a tackler.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, the one thing that there's really not much to say about is our weekly kicker update. I mean, we need some intro music for this. But
no, but he didn't miss. He didn't miss.
He hasn't. I mean, hardly. What's he got? One missed kick all year?
And they took one out of his foot by going for it on fourth down there when they should have.
I thought they should have. At the time, I thought they should have. This isn't, second guessing because they didn't get the first down. I thought they should have kicked it.
Yeah, me too. I agree. That one should have went through the upper. And it would have happened. You know, now, you know, ifs and nuts or candy, you know, he's whatever. It doesn't matter. The reality is it didn't happen, but he didn't screw up. So we're not talking about him. So that's the best part about it. You know, nothing to say.
So we did ask, we'll keep doing it on Twitter. You know, each week we'll put out, Eric will put out, you know, just say, hey, ask us your questions on Twitter. And all you have to do is reply to it and we'll get them. So we put out, we got just a couple today. And so let's go. The first one is from Steve Sorensen, Sorny 33. And he said, I'd like to see our opposing linebackers. So he means opponent linebackers and safeties in conflict at the goal line. In my humble opinion, you do this with play action from under center, especially when your QB is not a run threat. Question one, do you think Jordan Love will play under center in future games in 24? And then the second part, his knee can't be an excuse anymore. And then the second question, the Packers self-scout.
Well, Sorny, nice.
He's a friend of yours?
Yeah, actually, he was a stud running back at Ashwaubenon and
went on
to play at UND in his collegiate career. And coaches down in Arizona, some really fantastic football teams down there, and they won a state title recently. So this guy knows his football, and he's an offensive guru, although now he's a D coordinator. So it's a little interesting there. But he brings that vision to the question that he wanted to ask is something that we've been talking about a lot this season, and has been get under center. Play action passes is far more effective and far more able to disguise things and get in the most important.
Well, it's in short yard, and he's talking goal line here, you know, and in short yardage, isn't it better too? Cause the running back's more downhill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you get the line, and not only that, but you get the linebackers thinking. So if I want to run play action pass, what are we trying to do? We're trying to fool safeties and linebackers to create, and that creates gaps. That gap behind the linebacker and the gap in front of the safety gets bigger. And it also helps with the perimeter throws, because the linebackers and the safeties are staring downfield thinking it's a run and they got to come up and fill. And then, oh, Kyle, now it's going out to the numbers. I got to get on my horse and start running. It creates a lot of pressure on them when they come out from under center, and the threat of the run that they have with the Green Bay Packers are so strong running the football that you have to honor that. And I don't understand it either. I mean, that was one of the things that we really liked last year. And the way, if you look at the style of offense that they run, is very similar to San Fran, very similar to L.A. You know, they're from the same tree. I think they got to run more under center. And I know sometimes quarterbacks like to take it out of pistol or the gun because they feel like they have better vision. But the reality is you got to fool those guys and get those guys running forward to create, even if it's only a step, that's all it takes for a tight end to get open in the middle part of the field there. So, yeah, I think so. And, of course, I think the second question, of course, they do self-scout. And that was, I guess, was supposed to be what Robert Saleh was supposed to be doing, was helping them self-scout on, you know, what opposing defenses see when they take the field and they line up. So, of course, they do. How effective it's been, maybe sometimes they've out-scouted themselves in a couple of games. But I don't think so recently, in the last two games anyway. And I, you know, but I agree. I mean, you got to, I think taking the ball under center, especially in a compressed area down near the goal line, is a bigger challenge for defenses.
Yeah. And the one thing that I've, you know, found, you know, doing this 30 plus years, you know, because that's a great point. I wondered the same thing, that they had a couple short yardage and a couple goal line plays where I'm like, well, okay, you know, he's going to be under center for this, and they're in the pistol. And they ran them, and they got the first downs, and they got in the end zone. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, it worked. But I was wondering, you know, it just felt wrong. Like, why are they doing that? And the only thing I'll say, and I'm not defending them, is sometimes they have reasons for doing it. They have to do with what they see with whoever they're playing. It's a game-to-game matchup kind of thing. And it's whatever they're seeing defensively. So they have a reason for doing it. I think most of the time anyway, they do. It doesn't mean the reason's a good one, though. You know, sometimes, like you said, I think they're outthinking themselves like they've done in the past. But they, you know, they do study reams of film, and they have all this data. So there's you know, like for Steve's question here, I mean, they're doing it for some reason, and they won't tell you. Like, if we ask in a press conference, they're not going to say what it is because they don't want to tell opponents why they're doing what they're doing. They want to make them try to figure it out themselves. But, you know, they do have reasons for it. Not always good reasons, but they do.
Yeah, but to Steve's point, when you got a running threat at quarterback, that opens up. So you want him to get the ball in shotgun because in that situation, because now the defense has got to think RPO, you know, run pass options. They also got to think about zone reads. You know, are they gonna? Is it gonna be a, you know, for lack of a better word, an option run where they're gonna, you know, possibly give it to the running back or pull it back and have him come around end. In those situations, yeah, you really want, because that adds to the layer of things that defense has got to be ready for. But the reality is, you know, in this situation where he's not running the football, get him under center.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, the knee, you know, he's right. The knee is not an issue anymore at all. I mean, he's moving fine. So I don't know. We'll see if that was just for whatever reason, a game plan thing for the, you know, for this week or the last couple of weeks, and if it'll change depending on opponent. If they do play Philadelphia, it'd be really interesting because the Eagles have those two huge defensive tackles that you're trying to run against. So the next question is from Say Cheese.
Cheese.
I think having something to play for made a huge difference in this game. The Vikings locker room celebration showed what it meant to them. It felt like LaFleur kept some things in his back pocket, maybe in anticipation of a rematch when it matters more. Do you get that sense?
No.
I didn't. Not I don't. I didn't either. Teams do, because some coaches do that, but I did not. I do not.
Not in this situation. This was a should win, you know, not a must win, but this is a one they wanted to win.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they held anything back. I think it was just again, it comes down to the quarterback not making the right decisions all the time.
And one other question from Escott. When will the defense blitz more instead of always dying a slow death? Front four can't get it done on their own against good teams.
That's a great question, Mexican Scott. I think, thinking about this whole thing, I've been griping about this for a couple of weeks, and that is that they send a backer and drop a lineman. That's just a deep, defensive back disease that you got to get over with. You know, as a defensive back coach,
they did that yesterday. I noticed they rush four with they drop a lineman, but it's only four still.
Yep, and then when they drop the lineman, half the time they're back there covering the flat, and there ain't nobody there. So why waste them? Send them. You know what? Just do it. You gotta send five sometimes. And if you really want to heat the quarterback up, I mean, a guy like, let's just looking ahead, Caleb Williams, heat him up because he's just going to fold and get sacked because he runs around like a maniac. And Jalen Hurts, you got to heat him up because he's going to throw the ball up. Against Darnold too, where I thought Darnold excelled yesterday was that when he did feel pressure, he stood back there and threw it and took the shot. And then he was also nifty enough to get around a little bit, but still continue to throw the football. That's important. And Jalen Hurts, I don't think is going to be that guy. So I think you might see a little bit more of a defensive pressure of just four and let's just create a big cup around him. But I still think sending five is it's very effective. I mean, you still got six back there. And you saw the Vikings do it too. On many occasions, they sent five. They played a 3-3 zone. You see three guys underneath and three guys over the top. So, other teams are okay to do it. And I think at this point in the season, when you're getting to that point where you just got to play and you got to win, you got to let it go. Let it go. Get five in there and heat that quarterback up.
Darnold must have a little twitch because this 40 time was only – I just looked it up today, 4.85. That's not very good. I mean, that's pretty slow.
He was smart, though. He felt the pressure and would move around in the pocket just enough. It wasn't like he was, tucking it and running. He was still kept his eyes downfield and felt the pressure, moved around a little bit, and got the ball out, took some shots. No doubt about that. It just – you know what? He was a more mature quarterback than what Jordan Love was yesterday.
Yeah, that's the perfect word for it. And I'll have to go back to the column and get that in there because, I looked it up. Hurts So the three quarterbacks that they've lost the five games to, Hurts, Goff, and Darnold all have at minimum twice as many starts as Love does in the NFL. Now, that alone doesn't do it. You got to have some talent too, but twice as many starts, that's pretty significant.
Absolutely, it is. Yep. You know, Darnold was a first-round quarterback, so, you know, he's not devoid of skills. You know, just needed a better situation with a better coach, better tools around him. You know, and it shows. It shows what Kevin O'Connell is doing up there, and the way that he teaches his quarterbacks and the way they're listening. And they're a bought-in football team too. But I still think, I mean, look at – he made some bad passes. There's no question about it. He threw some balls up. So it just goes to show, heat the guy up. And I think if they have to play him again, I think they're going to heat him up even more.
Well, even if this game ends up not mattering, the Packers got to play. I might do a column on that this week. The Packers got to play everybody. They need to go out and play good. Love needs the reps. All those receivers need the reps against in real competition, trying to win a game. The only guy I would even consider sitting down or not playing very much is Jacobs. And even with him, I think they have to play good football, and they got to get those guys as much work as they can get. And so they got a game this week. So they've got to play everybody in my mind.
You're 100% on. I don't think the drop off is as significant when they got Emmanuel Wilson back there, surprisingly enough. And Brooks brings a little bit, you know, he had a couple of bad opportunities when he was supposed to be blocking yesterday where he blew by guys and it blew up the play. But I think Jacobs is the guy. You get him warmed up a little bit and then kind of like feather him down to it. And at halftime, it's, you know, listen, if they need him to play in the second half against the Bears, shame on them. You know, then they're you know, that's not a good situation. But I think what they're really going to have to do defensively is get in Williams' face, get it done early, shut him down so that, you know, get a 21-0 lead or something like that at halftime. And then you can kind of – then and only then can you take the foot off the gas a little bit and move some guys around. And, you know, if you're up 21-0, seeing Willis at halftime come out on the field, that ain't going to bother you. But if it's a 17-13 game, you know – Love, you're sticking in there. You're in it for the long haul, son, and you're going to get after it because you got to work through it. There's only one way to do it, and it's to get out there and do it. And they have the pieces around them. They got a running back. They got tight ends. They got receivers that are serviceable when they decide to catch the football. And, you know, they got an – most importantly, their offensive line. You can say he's under pressure a bunch yesterday. I will completely disagree with you. Most of the times when he was under pressure is because he hung on to the dang ball too long. Get out there and play. And I think they're going to – they have to do it. They need the momentum coming out of the game going into the playoffs. That they got to have a good feeling. You can't come out of that game with a sour taste in your mouth. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, they need the work. They need the reps. Well, we've gone a little over time here, Eric, so we better wrap this up.
We get paid by the minute, don't we?
And we do not. It turns out
shit.
We do not.
Hey, if there's anyone out there that wants to be a sponsor, we are taking sponsorships, and it's very cheap. Maybe just a couple of Guinnesses down at the Lorelei would suffice. But hey, whatever you guys
want. Make anybody look bad. So yeah.
not yet. We edit all those parts out, by the way.
Yes, these things can be edited. So I just want to say thanks to everybody though for joining us and for downloading us. I'm glad you think we're worth the time. And remind you that we'll be back again next week, same time and place, to talk about the Packers-Bears game to wrap up the 24 regular season. And then we'll be talking about whoever they're going to play in the playoffs that weekend. So lots going on. We're finally getting to money time here in the NFL season. So until next week, just want to remind you, you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. For Eric, I'm Pete. Take care, everybody.